Well, I'm going to talk tonight, or the final talk today, about Jesus being the author and finisher of our faith. And I was just talking with Paul about some historical things. I like history. I do. I have gained an appreciation, especially for church history. More, I think it would amaze my 8th grade history teacher that I love history so much now. But the older I get, my experience has showed me the value of knowing history. You think that I come up with some new way to handle a verse in the Bible, and I read the history of Christian thought, and I'm about the 4th guy. You know, it's like nothing new under the sun. That's why I think it is good to know history. I would like to watch the History Channel too, just for that reason. It's nice now to look back and see how all these things work together to get us to where we are right now. It's interesting, for me anyway, to know that information. See how things are now based on what has happened in the past. Baseball, one of my favorite sports to watch, has its share of statistical information. Huh?
Everything.
I can't believe it. You know, but that's why Barry Bonds is in the news. Not because of the steroid thing, but because he's like 9 or 10 home runs short of breaking the home run record. So if there was no history, it would be nothing. If we didn't know what had happened in the past, we wouldn't know that it was important what's going on now. Looking back and looking around, I think, helps us look ahead. I'll give you a real quick illustration about this. You might have walked up to somebody and said something to them like, "Have you heard the story about..." You see, what you're doing is checking the history. You're checking the history. Have you heard that story about... And if they say, "Well, no," then you continue on. So the... what has happened in the past affects what's going on now. I'll tell you the story I was thinking about. Did you hear the one about the butcher that backed into the meat grinder? He got a little behind in his work. Knowing history, I think, is beneficial. More than those who fail to know history are doomed to repeat it. More than just that, but it can give us encouragement. Now, it says 1 Corinthians 10:13, says that there is no temptation that's overtaken you, but such as is common to man. Other people have dealt with what you're dealing with and come through it successfully because they've relied upon Jesus, upon God's Spirit. You can do it too. You can do it too. Somebody had told me one time, we didn't drive through the Redwood, did we? Through the... Well, somebody had, one of my acquaintances had, and he said, "Here's a sign, you can drive your car through it." And he said, "I was looking down the road, there's the tree, and I didn't think we were going to make it, but there was a sign that said, many people have driven through it, you can too." So he said, I believed him, and we did. Knowing history helps us and gives us encouragement. That's one of the reasons why I think it's good to look back on what Jesus has done. He is our hero. We had that for our Sunday school theme quite a few years ago, about 60, I think. Jesus is my hero. Still have the t-shirt. He's our champion. He's our captain. He's our founder. Our faith is based upon what he has done. So I want to look at a little information this afternoon, give you some encouragement. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. Oh, Isaiah 9, 6. We don't generally look at Isaiah 9, 6 unless it's going to be Christmas time pretty soon. But we're going to look at it today. Isaiah 9, 6. Unto us a child is born. Unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of all those titles, and I'm going to just focus in on one. set the others aside so we can draw this one title out, and that is Mighty God, among all those other ones listed. Mighty God. This might be a less than perfect translation is Mighty God. The Hebrew term for used here is El, E-L, Gibor, G-I-B-B-O-R. That's the English way to spell it. El Gibor. El means mighty. And Gibor means champion. So Mighty God might not be the best translation. What we could say is our mighty champion. That's Jesus. In 1 Samuel 17, that chapter that deals with David and Goliath. You all remember that story? David and Goliath. There, 1 Samuel 17 and verse 4, there it uses the word Gibor for Goliath. Goliath was the champion of the Philistines. He was their hero. And they followed him wherever he went until he met David. Goliath was a Gibor of the Philistines, but he was not El Gibor. So El Gibor means mighty champion. I don't know if the word captain, we use that for Jesus, but I don't know if captain is used like it used to be used, the word. You know, like a captain of the team. When I was in high school, I was privileged to be able to earn the right to be the captain of the wrestling team. When I was a senior in high school, I was a captain. Other people looked to me for inspiration, and I tried to give it. I was the guy that had to lead the calisthenics at the beginning and the end of practice. And I had to do it in my own mind. I had to do it until everybody dropped but me, because I'm the captain. And I'm going to show them what it takes. And they're going to drop and they're going to say, I can't do it. But they're going to see me and they say, yes, I can. If he can, I didn't look like this then. But if he can do it, I can do it. That's what I tried to instill in them as the team captain. Jesus, as our mighty champion, is our team captain. And if he can do it, he says, we can do it. I want you to look with me back to that book in the New Testament of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 12. I don't know how many times we talked about this today, but we're going to do it one more time. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let's lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let's run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So much of the New Testament can be illustrated with athletic contests. Paul uses athletics, running, and wrestling. He uses that term of wrestling connected with prayer. That wrestling earnestly in prayer for each other. Here, we see the idea of a race, running a race, taking off everything that is not necessary that might hinder us from running that race. We're instructed to let it go, because there is one priority, and that is to run this race that's set before us. We need to look to Jesus. We need to look back in the Gospels to Jesus to see how he ran this race. And the writer of Hebrews here points out directly that passion, his crucifixion, his murder, his death is one of the most important things for us to look at. And verse 3 tells us we need to consider him. We need to consider Jesus, who endured such hostility from sinners against himself. I could pretty much guarantee that nobody sitting here listening to me has had to deal with the kind of hostility Jesus had to deal with. We might have had tough times in our lives. We might have had miserable bosses. We might have had tough neighbors or bullies in school. But we have not had to deal with the hostility from sinners that Jesus had to deal with. That's why we need to keep our eyes on him. It says, because if we don't, you might become weary and discouraged in your soul. Now there's that word discouraged again. We might become discouraged. Now all of a sudden saying, tempting God, saying, wait a minute, it ain't supposed to be like this. Yeah, the way it is the way it is. That's the way it works. In verse 4 it says, you have not resisted to bloodshed in your struggle against sin. Jesus is the author and the finisher of our faith. He's the champion, the author. You can use the word champion there for author. The champion of our faith. If you want to know what faith is supposed to look like, if you want to know what God thinks a faithful human being lives like, look at Jesus. That's what God's going to say. He is the example. He is the standard. When you get judged, you judge yourself according to him. Not anybody else. Not Billy Graham or anybody. But Jesus. He's the standard. He's the finisher of our faith. Now, this is interesting to me. I hadn't known this before, but the idea of finisher is the one who shows us how to complete our faith. How do you complete it? This is the way Jesus did it, even unto death. There is no way that Jesus could have finished faith short of dying. If he wasn't obedient to death, he wouldn't have been completely obedient. Does that make sense? And every time we decide not to be obedient, we can't be completely obedient either. When I was a wrestling team captain, the record I had for matches that year, I lost one match and I won 8. I was injured at the end of the season. I separated my sternum and I couldn't wrestle. So I missed one of my matches. But I was able to get into the tournaments. There I am, taped up. Can't hardly take a deep breath because of the tape. It was so restrictive. I still wanted to show the other guys what it was like to get out there and do it. So short of bragging, it's not really bragging, it's just the way it worked out. In the last tournament that I wrestled in, my first match, I had to wrestle the guy who was the number one seed. I wasn't even seeded. I was just a nobody at this tournament, and I had to wrestle the number one guy in my weight class. I wrestled him with tape on my chest. I went out there and wrestled him. I beat him 11-0 in 3 minutes. The referee of the match, it was a coach over at one of the junior colleges, and he said, hey, you want to come and wrestle for me? I said, yeah, I would, but I'm already signed up for the Coast Guard. Sorry. I was the captain, and my record showed that I deserved to be the captain. I tried to show the team what hard work could do. To encourage them. Spur them on. But it's all in a temporal sense. It really doesn't last. After I graduated from high school, there's a new team, a new captain, new things to achieve, and I was in the record books, but I was forgotten. I go back to the high school now, nobody knows who I am. And if I say I was a captain of the wrestling team back in 1968, they'll say, when? Did they know how to wrestle then? But when we looked at Jesus as a captain of our faith, he's shown us what obedience does on a spiritual level. You still in Hebrews? Turn over to chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2. Jesus shown us what obedience will do on a spiritual level. And here in chapter 2, beginning with verse 5, it says about Jesus, or God rather, for God has not put the world to come, that's the age to come, of which we're speaking, in subjection to angels, but one testified in a certain place, saying, what is man that you are mindful of him? Or the Son of Man that you take care of him? You have made him a little lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor, and you have set him over the works of your hands. You have put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we do not yet see all things put under him. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels. Now this is where it gets hard. Made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. Crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone. For everyone. That's the thing that Jesus had set before him to do. To experience this death. Then he was crowned with glory and honor so that he could taste death for every one of us. This is the now but not yet kind of thing. We're not talking about some sort of a God hybrid. We mentioned that earlier. We're reading about the man Jesus, who was the Christ. It was the obedience of Jesus unto death that was important. If you look at verse 10, for it was fitting for him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. There's no difference between Jesus and us. You know, one of the best ways to make a person perfect is suffering the flesh. We talked about that a little earlier. Suffering the flesh, we're going to stop sinning. That's going to make us complete, perfect, mature, make us grow up. That's what Jesus did. He needed to be perfected through the things that he suffered. That's what the scriptures tell us. He wasn't perfected before the sufferings, but after the sufferings. In all the forms, however it may have been, those things that we have a difficult time picking out of the Gospels, when he did suffer, even in those times. So we remember Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 11. Let's look at that again. Let me read that for you. I don't think I can recite it from memory and get it correct. Philippians chapter 2, starting with verse 5. Again, the encouragement, the instruction, the directive is, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Let this mind be in you. And I think that every translation will say something like, let this mind be in you. What it tells me is, we've got to cooperate with God as far as this mind thing goes. He wants us to have it. We've got to agree with God and let it be in us. Let this mind be in you. Allow it to be in you. And here, verse 6 tells us about Jesus. Even though he was in the form of God, he didn't consider the equality with God something to be grasped. But he made himself of no reputation. He took the form of a bondservant. He came in the likeness of man, and being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. That's our captain. And he says, come and follow me. Come and follow me. Now, this isn't the end of the story. The rest of the story follows. Because he was obedient to the point of death, even the death on the cross, verse 9, for that reason, that's the reason God has exalted him highly above everyone. He's given him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow, of those in heaven and those on the earth and those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of the Father. That's our captain. He says, come on, it's hard, it's uphill, it's difficult, it's painful, but look at what we have at the end. When you stand and you see somebody like one of those young wrestlers working hard, doubting himself, trying to learn the moves, doing the best he can, and you see him get an award at a tournament, it's worth all of the stuff you have to go through to get there. And Jesus is saying, look at what I've got now. That short time of suffering is nothing. Paul said, the sufferings of this present time are not even worthy to be compared with the glory that's going to be revealed. It's not even worth being mentioned in the same sentence for what we have. And Jesus says, come on. I've got something for you. I want you to join me. He said in the parables, enter into the joy of your Lord. Come on. Well done, good and faithful servant. Come on and enjoy this with me. We'll go back to Hebrews chapter 2 a minute. Jesus was made perfect, brought to that top position through suffering. That's where he was elevated to, because he was willing and obedient. And he says, for us to come along. Turn over there to chapter 5 a minute. Chapter 5, verse 7. How easy was it for Jesus? Piece of cake, right? No, no problem. Get up in the morning, do a few miracles. Have lunch, you know, make a few contacts, go home, kick back, piece of cake. No, it was not. He was by himself. Even though he had people around him, he was by himself. Now look at chapter Hebrews 5, 7. Who in the days of his flesh, and that's what we have now, we're in the days of our flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his godly fear. And we talked about that episode in the garden earlier today. Though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things that he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to everyone who obeys him, everyone who lives his way, everyone who follows him, everyone who answers that invitation, come and follow me. He has been made the author of eternal salvation. Our captain was brought to fullness by suffering and being obedient. And the obedience was what brought the suffering. The question this afternoon is, partly, can you do that? Can you do that? Can we do that? Can we be brought to this fullness by suffering, by being obedient, willing to suffer? Well, how much, on a 1 to 10, how much suffering are we willing to do to be obedient to God? Now, you just don't go out and cut your arm off because it's going to be suffering. No, no, no. You suffer because we're doing what's right. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for doing what I want them to do, Jesus said. Those are blessed people. Jesus became the cause, the catalyst for our salvation to all those who obey the gospel. Jesus had pioneered the way. What is remarkable to me is nobody showed Jesus how to do it except God. Jesus is our example. Who did Jesus have for an example? Just his Father. Well, we have our Father too. Same Father. But we don't make it like Jesus made it. He pioneered the way for us. And we need to look to him to show us now how to do it. He invites us to follow him. We mentioned that earlier. Come and follow me. Alla katheo. Get in this harness with me. Let's pull together. You're not in it alone. He's given us the Holy Spirit as a helper, as a guide. God desires each of us to be conformed to the image of his Son, Jesus Christ. The captain of our faith says, come on, I want you to be like me. Come on, you can do it. And then there is another voice that says, oh no, no, that's too tough. Oh no, that's too much. Oh no, that's too great of a task. Don't listen to that voice. Listen to Jesus. Be like the captain. I said it earlier. I'll say it again. He was like we are, so we can be like he is. So we can be like he is when he comes to be resurrected and changed to immortality.